the only shooting stick with one-handed trigger pull adjustments, has a new way to keep you at the top of your game. The Trigger Stick Apex. Built for sturdy support that adapts to unforgiving terrain with easy adjustments to make your big shots. With our Durasteady 3-piece carbon leg design and interchangeable rock-solid clamp, nothing tops the Apex. The Trigger Stick Apex, only from Primos.
If you hunt enough, you learn the truth. What you seek speaks a language and knows it well. That's why every Primos call for everything you hunt is made the right way. We sweat every detail so you get more out of every hunt, and nothing leaves our hand until we know it'll work in yours. Because we don't just make the world's best calls, we speak the language. Primos.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Here in the Northern Rockies, dark winter months are outlasted in basements, dens, and nooks where kindred souls gather together to share intel, swap fly patterns, and relive the memories from seasons past. This gathering spot, known locally as the February Room, is the inspiration for this podcast. No matter the season, the door is always open to those with a fly fishing story to tell. Here's your host, the Carnops, and this is the February Room.
The February Room is brought to you by Adams Built Fishing, quality gear for all anglers.
RioCraft, fly rafts designed to last.
Allrod, go anywhere, fish anything.
And Got Fishing, world-class fishing adventures.
It's been a while, Justin.
Yeah, it's been like nearly a year, right?
It's been a year, and a lot's happened since the last time of our last podcast. I got a drone's license.
You did get a drone's license, yeah, right. Among other things.
Yeah. Started a new job, which has been great, in experiencing Montana in such a different, unique way. But I still love fishing and I love this podcast. And we both keep saying, we've got to get back on here.
Well, I'm really excited to get it fired up again. We've got a lot of really cool guests out there, really cool stories that we want to dive into. And we also have some new sponsors. So, you know, getting some sponsors on the podcast has been huge. It's taken some work to get there, but we didn't want to relaunch until we had all the pieces in place and we feel like we're there. So,
well, and that's the thing when you start a podcast is that it seems that, oh, it's so easy, but it does take, it's part of your free time. And right now we have kids that are doing lacrosse and we had...
Yeah, they're banging around in the background here.
Yeah, but the one thing that was funny is today we had a lacrosse game and a YMCA run. And Justin looks at me and goes...
Two lacrosse games.
Yeah. And Justin goes, I don't want to be this person. I said, too late, you're in it.
Yeah, it was funny because I ran into Pete Vandegrift and at the lacrosse thing, and he was kind of saying the same thing. He's like, we fought this for as long as we could. We were not going to be the parents that went to all these sporting events and spent all our time traveling around to sporting events. But you just kind of end up there, I guess. It's kind of inevitable.
But talking about fishing stories, at least last weekend, you and I got a babysitter, which cost so much money. She's great, though. Totally worth it. But we got to go on the water last week, and it was awesome.
Yeah, that was a fun day. You're kind of learning how to row, which has been super fun. You're picking it up really quickly. That was a good day to get out because the Clark Fork was pretty pushy. And, you know, it was a good day to kind of learn the nuances of fighting and maneuvering a boat, you know, as a fishing captain, it's different than just being able to row a boat successfully, safely navigate a boat down a river. Being an actual like fly fishing captain is a totally different thing. And it's really fun to watch you kind of figure it out, because you're doing a good job of, you know, kind of rowing with the current, not fighting it, and learning how to set up the boat so the angler has more success, basically.
You know, when we were on the water, I think that's what I said every time I was on the sticks, was I'm trying not to fight against the river. I'm trying to at least have the river help me when it comes to flowing down the river and getting you set up correctly. Because beginning, I felt like I was always pushing against it, or like rowing up. And I've got man hands. I've got some good calluses going on. Look at this. Would you think those look like...
No, I would not say that those were working hands. They're man hands, but they're kind of like, I don't know, maybe accountant hands?
Accountant hands?
Like man accountant, well, I don't know.
Oh my God.
I mean, look at these.
Yeah, those are disgusting.
And these are in really good shape right now.
I
haven't fought the runoff yet. In a month and a half, these will look much worse.
But back to it, is the fact that you have to have your angler set up for success. And how do you get the fly to have the most successful drift while staying parallel, while keeping your eyes forward? Because you make it look so easy. You will be setting me up and then looking downriver. Oh, we've got five rises coming up. Get your line ready. And so more than anything, I really want to take Odessa and Sawyer floating without you. And the backup trailer is a bit...
Backing up with the trailer. That's going to... Yep.
That drives me crazy. A work in progress.
Yep.
I know someone on the podcast, it was Brandon Dwyer, said two things that can cause a couple to divorce. And he said a kitchen remodel and someone teaching your wife how to row a boat and back up a trailer. So, but we survived.
It's true.
We're doing good.
We did. And we got, we got stuck in the, it's been windy this spring. Like today's dead calm, cloudy, should have been on the river at two lacrosse games at the Riverbank Run, heading to birthday party next, still yet this evening. And today's like calm, cloudy, perfect. And whatever. Every day I've been out lately, it's been windy. And that day we went, man, did it kick up in the afternoon. That was rough.
Well, and I would curious, anyone who's listening, what tips you have for backing up a trailer? Because I was telling you, I was talking with a biologist, and he told me that if you have your hands down at the bottom of the wheel, and wherever you turn the wheel, so if your hands move to the left, that's where the boat's going to be. But I was having a really hard time as I was going
And I was doing a bad job of kind of coaching you, because I haven't really taught people how to do that before. It's just something I've done for most of my life, and it's somewhat intuitive for me. Not that I don't screw up backing up trailers periodically. I do, especially in our driveway, which is tight and challenging, and it's got that big bump right as you put the trailer back up on the driveway. So anyway, not that I'm a master, but I've never like taught someone really how to do it. And I felt like I was often giving you the opposite advice of what you needed. So it's hard for me to look at somebody backing up, you know, because
it's obviously totally your
backing
fault.
Up a trailer, you're turning the wheel the opposite way that you normally would. But then when you're watching it from the outside, It was hard for my mind to do all that. But, you know, I can't solve a Rubik's Cube or really build a straight birdhouse either. So I'm not the most mechanically inclined person on earth.
Well, let's hear a fishing story real quick. Let's both end this. We're making this nice, short, and quick. Let's rattle off one of our favorite fishing stories this past year.
Well, for me, can I go first?
That's exactly. I was setting you up.
Okay. Well, for me... you know, I grew up in Bend, and I, you know, worked on the Deschutes, and I was down in the Dalles a lot, near the Columbia a lot, and had been invited to go sturgeon fishing several times over the years, and I never went. And it's one of those things like, why in the hell have I never gone sturgeon fishing? Why have I never caught a sturgeon? And so this past winter, I had a trade show in California, and I decided to drive from Montana over to the Oregon coast and kind of fish my way down for steelhead. And, you know, rather than just kind of commit to steelhead, I went ahead and met up with our friend Brian Keachley, who we met in this podcasting universe. And he took me out on out of Portland for a morning, and I got to catch a smaller sturgeon, and then I got to catch a big like 7-foot sturgeon and have that experience. So that was really cool for me. It was really unique. We were out there in his drift boat. We're the only ones out there.
What'd you catch it on?
We caught, I think that one ate a smelt. So we were fishing like sand shrimp. I think we caught the smaller one on a sand shrimp and then that big 7-footer. And when I hooked it, we were probably in 20 feet of water, so it wasn't super deep. And, you know, we were throwing like a 12-ounce like weight, and you're just dropping the kind of the bait on the bottom and holding the boat there, using the fish finder and everything to see him. And man, as soon as I hooked it, because I've seen him do this on videos and people have talked about it, I could feel it coming up to the surface. And so like a tarpon, like it came up and Brian was playing around, freaking out in the back of the boat, you know, getting stuff ready, like right on, big fish on. And it came up and tail walked, and I, you know, came up, flew up on the surface, tail walked this big 7-foot sturgeon. And I bowed to it, you know, dropped the rod and gave it just that little bit of slack so it didn't spit me. I don't know that it would have, but it seemed like the right thing to do. And then from there, it was just cranking and reefing on it and getting it up. And we got it up alongside the boat, and we were able to scoot over to the bank. Right there, there was this nice little sandy spot. So we got a couple really good photos of it, and then, you know, released it away. And it was just super cool to see one of those, to get your hands on one. What an amazing creature. It's a
how
old
dinosaur.
Yeah,
I was going to say, how old do you think a fish like that gets?
Well, I think there's one called Herman that's at the Bonneville Sturgeon uh-huh. Center, which I stopped in on this trip, which I drove past 100 times in my life and never bothered to pull in there. But this trip, I was like, I'm going to do the whole sturgeon tourist thing.
Yeah.
So I pulled in there and checked it out, saw Herman, and I can't remember how old that fish is, but we'd have to Google that, but I don't want to misspeak, but it they can live to be really old, like I think that one
old.
I caught, he thought was 30 years old or something.
Wow.
You know, 20 or 30 years old. But it was really cool, and I caught it on just that short all salt jig, all rod jig section, that just with the short little jig piece in place. And Brian has one of those rods, and he's been trying to get a sturgeon on it, and it just hasn't come together because, you know, they haven't been biting when he's been trying to fish it or whatever. So it was really cool because that was the first one that he saw get landed on that. And it was, you know, kind of proved that product for that particular game too, which was awesome. So
good energy.
Super cool. Yeah, it was really cool. It was really fun. I'm glad I got a chance to do it. I've always wanted to do it. I definitely something I'd go do again too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's so funny. I you know, as you're talking about this amazing experience, I was trying to think what's the coolest thing I've done or great fishing story I've had in a year. And I can't even top right now because it's almost been a year since I went rooster fishing with the ladies.
Mm-hmm.
And that just, I think I've hold on to that story, and I sit with these biologists for my job, and I tell them about my fishing story, and I'm running out of fishing stories. So I'm super excited because this, the end of May, I'm going to Isla Mirada with my friend Ashley to go tarpon fishing. And my expectations are low because everyone who I tell I'm going tarpon fishing tell me, don't get your hopes up. Just like squashing the dream. Squashing the dream. They're like, if you hook one, that's a good one. Or maybe they're just trying to make me set up that if I do just hook a tarpon, that's considered a catch. But I'm super excited. I've been casting out in the backyard. And that's all I've got in my head. But I wonder if anyone has this experience who's listening. Like when you have such an amazing experience, like rooster fishing, and you love it, it's hard to pay money to go do something other than the thing that you love. But the tarpon fishing, it's been on my bucket list, so I'm excited to get that. And maybe this will be my new favorite thing. Maybe I'll love it more than rooster fishing. But it is hard to walk away from something that just gets your adrenaline running, like rooster fishing.
Well, hopefully you get to see some rolling tarpon and get some shots at rolling tarpon.
Smashing my dreams right now. You're smashing my dreams.
Just as long as the weather cooperates. Again, like through the podcast network, you know, we got the guide recommendation from
Mary Lee,
who fishes with this guy down there out of the Keys. And yeah, so that'll be an awesome experience for you and your friend that you went rooster fishing with. You've been back at it practicing, getting ready for that one, throwing the 10 or 11 weight out back. So yeah, I got your box all done. You're all tied up. If you don't have the right fly, I don't know what to tell you.
Oh, I think my guide will have tons of other flies.
I'm sure he will. I doubt he probably won't even tie a single one of those on. But at least you have a box with you.
Because you spend every February sniffing glue.
I do, indeed. A lot this February and March and April. I'm still sniffing glue. It's still, we've got a lot of wet, rainy days. And I'm still tying flies. But yeah, it's funny too. You know, I was thinking about that last night. I was tying up a bunch of GT flies for a friend, and you know, I tied six of them, and I'm like, this is like, you know, this might be 5 years worth of GT flies. Like, you don't use very, you'll see, like, you'll probably fish the same fly the entire time you're tarpon fishing, even though you got a box of like 30 of them.
And so, I know you tied a green one, and I don't know why, maybe because the green one was so successful when we were in Alaska that I had this idea that that's the one I should be. That's the one I'm going to be casting out
chartreuse
there.
Chartreuse is always a good color.
Chartreuse?
Yep.
It's the truth.
Yep. But you got to have one fishing story. I mean, you've been out trout fishing several times.
Oh,
you
yeah.
went and did that. Well, you did that really cool grayling project, but you didn't fish on that one. But that was that grayling.
No,
survey.
Don't you remember? No, stop. We did go grayling fishing. Remember?
Oh,
we went
we
up
did.
To the mountain
we
lake.
To, we went to the mountain lake. Yeah.
Yeah,
we
hiked
did.
Up there.
We did.
Justin hauled a paddleboard because he goes, I've been wanting to go to a mountain lake, and he goes and hikes up there with the paddleboard, and we have our puppy with us, and so half the time we're carrying her because she was just a 3 month old, but. That was really cool. I've never caught grayling before.
You caught a bunch of them, too.
I did.
Five or six. I think I only caught one or two.
Yeah. You know what I was surprised is just how you have to, with grayling, with those ones that we were catching, is that you couldn't set the fly right away. In the beginning,
yeah,
I was setting.
You couldn't set the hook.
Yeah, sorry,
you
set
had to
the hook.
Wait for them. It was really a hard hook set. Like,
yeah, you'd have to wait for it to eat it. You watch it eat it. You couldn't do anything about it, and
their
then you.
Are so small.
Yeah, so you wanted to make sure it ate it before you set the hook.
You had it down better than I did, for sure.
Maybe because I've just got a delayed response to everything that I do.
Well, maybe. Well, we're excited to get the podcast back up and rolling. It's going to be cool. We're going to, you know, keep posting the videos as we can get those done. You know, between the travel and the editing and everything, obviously that stuff takes a lot of time. But
only one editor.
There is only one editor. No, the royal we.
Yeah, royal we. Yeah. But thanks again for joining us. It's going to be a great season. We've got, like Justin said, some amazing guests that are going to be joining us, and hopefully dive into some more stories and investigative pieces.
Yeah, we got some cool stuff we've dug up. So
stay tuned, and thanks for being listeners on the February Room.
Go to thefebruaryroom.com, where you can access a complete library of our podcast and read more about our guests, their fishing stories, and favorite fly patterns. We're always looking for exceptional fly fishing yarns, and if you have one to spend, shoot us an email at info@thefebruaryroom.com. The February Room is always free, but if you feel like throwing a nickel in the pond, we appreciate any additional listener support. For companies and individuals interested in sponsorship opportunities, please contact us for our media kit. Thanks for stopping by the February Room, and we'll see you down here next week.